since the last time we met on Thursday, so I was involved in a serious car accident from which my two sons and I and all our freshly baked matzahs emerged unscathed. And the Rav wouldn't give me the green light for benching Goimel, but we tried to find some other ways around. There are ample opportunities to praise and to thank Hashem. So this is one of the ways we're going to try to thank Hashem, is by using the fact that we're on two feet and are able to give over some Devei Torah to do exactly that. So now, Baruch Shechiyonu v'kiyumonu v'giyonu l'zman hazeh, another way of thanking Hashem for being alive, because we're finally, at long last, starting Bishul. Maybe that's perhaps one of the most Shabbos-associated sugyas people talk about, the denim of Shabbos. It's a very, very large and very practical sugya. And we've been learning so many other sugyas related to Shabbos since after Sukkot, and now we're finally entering the inner sanctum of many of the complicated halachas of Shabbos. Of course, we've mentioned the various halachas in the course of our exploring the underpinnings of Hilchos Shabbos. So what I wanted to do today is to try to get a taste of numerous examples that the Gemara gives of the nature of the malacha of Mevashel, and see if we can come up with some basic guiding principles. To be very honest, it's difficult because of the fact that there are so many different examples that the Gemara gives throughout Masechta Shabbos of Mevashel, and they're listed off in the Rambam and in the Mishnah Berurah in the beginning of Shirin Ches, which we're going to see, Be'ez Hashem, and it gets to be a little bit confusing. So let's see. First of all, I just want to take a step back and talk about a fascinating machlokes between the Bahag and other Rishonim. When we talk about the Melechus of Mishkan being the paradigm for all of the 39 Melechus of Shabbos, what do we mean? Do we mean Melechus that was undertaken in order to construct the Mishkan, the parts of the Mishkan, the overall structure of the Mishkan itself after the parts were completed? Or do we even include that which was necessary in order to maintain the daily avodah? So the Bahag understands that the afia of the lechem aponim was considered part of the Melechus HaMishkan and is the source from where we derive the idea that the melacha of cooking and baking is aser. Tosfos assumes that it's the cooking of the samimonim, of the herbs that were used in order to create the dyes necessary for the Mishkan. Not every dye needed herbs. Some of the fabric was dyed with tcheles, which was, that was a different process. This assumes that the idea of cooking, it can be connected with, for example, cooking the samimonim in order to produce a dye.
For the structure of the
Mishkan, as opposed to what the Bahag extends that even to the maintenance and of the daily avodah. Now, what's fascinating about this is that we know there's a principle called Melacha Shein Tzricha LeGufa, and we explored that a little bit. And what's fascinating is that if you would try to look at Bishul from the lens of the way Tosfos understands it, we come up instantly, it seems, we come up with something a bit different than the classic Bishul. Normally speaking, okay, we do have an idea of chicken soup, we've got that idea. But normally speaking, when you put something in water and you cook it, so what you're trying to do is you're trying to change, to fix, to make more edible, to enhance the food which is being cooked in the water. And that's exactly not the case when you're boiling herbs or whatever other natural dyes you have, and you're trying to extract the dye, you're going to probably throw out whatever it is that you cooked. And what you want is the water, which you then can use to dye material. So the furthest thing from your mind, really, is to be misaken the whatever it is that you put into that pot. And what you want is the product that you're going to extract from it. And you could even go a step further and say the cooking is really more a way of applying heat and water so that those two forces join in order to create a situation where the dye is going to be released and the water is what it can be released into. So what have you been masaking? You've been masaking the water. That's basically what you've done. So, and that which you cooked in the water was only what you used in order to make the water to dye. So this immediately, on one hand, Tosis is going straight and narrow. This is this construction of the Mishkan. On the other hand, he seems to be expanding the idea of Bishul to include any time you're heating up something in water and you have some purpose that you're going to achieve through that, but it doesn't even have to be that you're aiming at the whatever it is that you're heating up in the water. It's just at the end of the process, you're ending up with something that you want. So this already would expand the basic definition of Bishul. So let's see the very, very almost opposite and varied types of tikkunim which the Rambam, we're going to filter through the Mishnah Berurah, lists off based on many Gemaras and Shabbos when we discuss what Bishul is all about. So let's see. Sif Aleph and Simon Shin Yud Ches, Din HaMavashal B'Shabbos, says the following thing. HaMavashal B'Shabbos, O'Sha'asa Achas Mish'ar Malachas, okay. B'mezid. Asra Loyla Oilam, we start off with a famous Knas that Rabbanon gave, that when a person, this is the first of the printout pages as opposed to the copied pages.
I got it.
And when a person intentionally violates the Shabbos and produces something thereby, so Asr Loyla Oilam, he may never for the rest of his life derive benefit from that which he did. He baked some bread on Shabbos, God forbid, so he's never allowed to eat that bread. V'la'acherim mutar l'maitzai Shabbos miyad. But for other people that who did not actually engage in the Chol Shabbos, once Shabbos is over, so then they may immediately partake of it, whereas on Shabbos itself, even other people may not partake of that bread. B'shoigeg, let's say a person didn't do b'mezid, but rather he did it unintentionally, so he himself, asr boi b'yoyim, gam la'acherim, so he's asr to it during that day, and also other individuals are asr to it as well. V'la erev muter gam lo miyad. Okay, and but as soon as the Shabbos is over, it's muter for him as well. Okay, so basically he has the same din as achirim when he does it b'shogeg. Okay,
and he doesn't have to wait until
it's
all
done. Oh, very good, very good. So it says ayin le'el simichin zayin sifkaf, and with that I'll send you over there. Of the idea of Kadesh Yasa. So now, what's fascinating is sometimes the Pesach can bring in a very interesting twist when it comes to, let's say you have just a fascinating shot, I'm just throwing this out to the crowd, V'idach Pirusha Zil Gemar, what happens if you have a soup, part of which was cooked on Shabbos, and part of which was not cooked on Shabbos, and they get mixed together? So may you partake of it on Shabbos. Would you apply the principle of bittul? And so one of the svaras that the post can bring up is that this is an example of a davar sheyesh l'matirin. If you have soup which was unintentionally cooked on Shabbos, so it's usher today, but it becomes worse because of the fact that we know that the principle is davar sheyesh l'matirin, something which is usher now but will eventually become mutter, is not going to be accepted into the whole category of bittul. We don't let it be in this battle. So it comes at the fact that we're more makil, that after Shabbos you could partake of the soup, would make it more complicated.
Which have been, in a bottle also.
Oh, okay, that's also correct. But these type of situations could come up, let's say hotels, or all kinds of interesting things, shalas are come up. So this perhaps would be an example. You have several pots of soup, and one of them involves some chilul Shabbos, even if they get mixed together, it would be a problem. Okay, let's proceed into the Mishnah Berurah. I divided the Mishnah Berurah over here into several sections because he brings up so many different points. And again, based on the Rambam in Perek Tes of Hilchos Shabbos, all based on different Gemaras. Let's see. Hamavashal. Echad hamavashal asamachal oyes asam emonim oyem echamim asamayim. So, either you cook food, or you cook some kind of herb, or you heat up water, Ratzaloimar, after Mayim Ro'i Lishtia, Beloi Bishol, says the Mishnah Berurah. The Chiddush over here, the Rambam, is that even though water, it could be contended, is not really being affected. It's just being heated up. V'hu adin chalav, and even so, would also be milk. We call makam chayav, kiven de mishtabeach ha'idei ha'bishol. He's still chayav because it's being improved through the bishol. With the chalav, you could maybe say there's a lasting effect. And as we pointed out, with the water, we do not presume there's a lasting effect. There could be a side benefit of, let's say, there's an issue of germs. But the mice of the water itself does not actually improve as a result of having been heated up. Only if you want it to be hot, then it's better that way. Ve'echad o'yfes ha'pas. And now we're going into the variation, which is baking. You bake bread. Hakol inyon echad hu. It's all one thing. So put in the Chavetz Chaim that afiyo hu me inyon bishul. Elo sha'afiyo hu bepas. Hu bishul hu bisha'arei dvarim. Okay, let's proceed now and see how far-reaching this malacha is. We'll move off the food grid and we'll go to other directions now. Hamatich echar mimine matachos kolshu. Anyone who melts any kind of metal, or someone who heats up metal achete osegacheles until it becomes red hot like a glowing coal, hareza told us mevashel. These are examples of tolda, of mevashel, even though it's not food, but you're involved in something which can improve the status of what you're heating up. Even though it's a metal, it's a tolda of mevashel. Sha'arei b'chimumoy, hu merakecha sheyehei ro'i l'saknoi v'lasis imenu kli, v'harei hu marpe dover hakasha. So the Mishnah Berurah points out that what does Rama mean when he says this? That, and the Gemara says this, what's the idea? You're heating something up, you're softening something which was previously hard, and the tikkun value is that metal is most usable when it's a kli, it's a kli. But when you're trying to do something with the metal, you need it to be hot. And that's the way you're going to be able to form the metal. V'chein hamemaseis es hadonok. Even melting beeswax. Oyes ha'chelev, or tallow. They used to use animal fat for candles. Oh yes, zephes, va'koifer, va'gofer. These are all types of tar that they would melt. They would smear, like we know that the teva, the teva, had the waterproofing was v'chafar tar. Some mibayis, some mikhus, va'koifer. V'chayoytze behen hareze told us mevashel v'chayav. So here we have a tremendous chiddush. That which the Gemara calls as the Tolda Mevashel tells us that even if we're not necessarily dealing with a tremendous amount of heat, when you're taking something which is naturally solid and you're heating it up and melting it, and now you can form it into something else, or you could use it for what it's being used for. You have a sealant that naturally is a gummy and more solid kind of mass, and you heat it up enough so that you could smear it on to whatever surface you'd like to waterproof. That, besides everything else, that's literally bishul, even though we're not talking about high heat. Because of the fact that you're bringing it to a state where now it's different than it was before, and we can improve or actually bring about the ability to use it for your benefit. So if you need to have melted wax in order to create a candle, so you've done bishul by melting the wax. If you need melted tar in order to coat your roof, right, you have the chevra on the top of the roof with those big yiriyot of the tar, whatever it is, and they're blowtorching it. That's bishul.
If the parameter is
only if you're ready
being changed in state
in July,
yeah.
When in order to make things cold, the bromo hydrochloride, which is what's used for suppositories and all those things, how do they cook it? You think of the hands like that with your hands, and that's enough to make it into liquid.
So, Alice, you want to know what would be the din? Could a person use his body heat to cook it?
Just have fire.
And that's going to be enough for bishul.
You're still using heat to change the state.
Heating it up to the point that it changes
right.
Your hands,
right.
You could heat it.
Okay, one second. Let's move off of this and we'll continue. It's a very good question. I'm not convinced. Let's go to the next artificial paragraph over here. V'chein, something much the opposite of what we discussed till now. Hamavashel kli adama. Ad she'yosoy cheres. I wouldn't have used the word mevashal. I think what he means is putting it into a kiln. You're taking clay and you're putting it into a kiln. Chayav mishum mevashal. The last time I did anything like that, I think, was in Camp Morasha and D Camp. I think. And I always thought the word kiln was like a kind of violent word. But yeah.
You have to say with a Scottish accent. It doesn't sound this bad.
Okay, I got you. Okay, so now the kodesh shem is chazek hakli v'nitzref b'hakibshon, that before the kli is strengthened and hardened in the furnace v'nasa cheres karoy, and it's made a full fledged pottery the way it's got to be, misbashel v'atit shel hakli. So first you're bringing, you know, the final result is just a hardened kli, but the idea of heating up the clay, which is what it's made out of, so that it's hardened, that heating it up is the melacha of bishul that we're identifying here.
But think about it, you're cooking the moisture inside the clay.
Very good. So we're going to get to this bishul soon. So now, and then he brings another example that is a fascinating example in the Gemara. Hanoisin chatichas eitz betanor. Back in the day, fuel used to be logs. So very commonly, you had something that wasn't exactly dry. You knew it was going to be causing a lot of smoke. It wasn't going to burn well. So what would you do? You'd actually dry out the firewood with an oven, or on top of an oven, near an oven. Uh-huh. And then you'd be able to use it as fuel. So, anoisen chatichas eitz betanor, kedei sheyis yabesh. V'yadua, and now he throws in, he keeps on doing this now, the Mishnah Berurah. V'yadua shemetchila hu misrape. That first, when you initially heat up the wood, it actually is softened once the moisture starts to penetrate the wood on its way out. It's almost like the Mishavu is apologizing and he's saying, well, really, I like to make a common theme over here when it comes to Bishul, that you're making something soft. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to try to find a thread of making it soft, which is somewhere along the line playing out. And that way, even though what you did is you hardened and dried out the wood, and like we had before, you're firing the pottery in the kiln, and you're making it harder, but you have that in-between stage that he pointed out, that the clay is losing its moisture in the process. So that, the Mishnah Berurah seems to be pointing at as a, ha, you see, we're doing an act of bishul. We're making something soft.
You're boiling out the moisture.
Right. Right. Like,
same thing with the wood.
However, we all know that when the classic bishul that we talk about, using water as a heating medium, it's not just that it softens the amount of heat that's being applied to the food, it's that the water ends up saturating the food, and A, it hastens the cooking process, and it also softens the food. It's not just the heat itself that softens the food, but the water penetrating it softens the food. You make a soup, so the vegetables actually become softer and more edible.
It's softening, and have an egg. Hardening
the egg. Excellent. So that's a great example, and I always wonder why this is such a. This is like the ace in the hole is the egg case, because you have it.
I think the ikar is that it's not about adding water into the machias.
No, but I just want to point out that for sure it's not necessarily about water, because you could take a piece of meat, put it on a spit, hold it over the bonfire, and that's soila, which is another variation.
But it's not bishul.
But it's one of the variations. Bishul, afia, tzlia.
Roasting.
Those are all.
Roasting.
But the point is that you don't dafka have to be introducing any water in order to have this basic malacha playing out. Now you're masaking the food in order to eat it, and then it's tzlia.
In many of these things, like whether it's vegetables that are softened or an egg that hardens, the idea is that
that's a cooking process.
And protein. And the protein is therefore what keeps the original structure and form, and therefore once it's a different form.
Yeah, but it's not what the Mishnah Berurah said. Mishnah Berurah says that the reason that it's bishul, not because you're hardening it, but because in the process
you're
softening it or you're boiling it.
Right.
So the molecules.
Oh yeah, I think the Mishnah Berurah was against protein.
But softening is just a placeholder.
It's a piece of toast, guys.
There is mitzvah change.
Right. Okay, so I want to come back to this, because you're mentioning that you have a chemical change that occurs when you cook a piece of meat, for sure. Okay, so let's see. Klolo shel davar. We're now the next paragraph. Bein sheripa guf kasha. Whether you softened a hard piece of whatever it is, be'esh, or shehikshe guf rach, or you took something soft and you made it harder. So suddenly, the Mishnah Berurah seems to... till now, he's been trying to put the softening part in anytime it gets to making something hard. That's what I've seen throughout the Mishnah Berurah. But now, he says, no, as long as you did one or the other, harez that chayev mishum mevashel. Okay, and then he even says this is the source of all this is Rambam in the ninth parak of Hilchos Shabbos. Valkein yesh azar me'oid shalad laniach etzim lachem ala tanur liyabshon achar shkias achama du chashash daraisa. So the Mishnah Berurah was talking in Radin at the turn of the 20th century. That's what was going on. That was like the big Yetzer Hara. Like, what was the big thing? Yeah. I don't know. Right? Don't make them one last comment on the chat. Like when it's about to be shkia, like maybe that would be 2024. And he's like, don't put that firewood on the oven, right? Because that could actually be bishul. He wouldn't think of it. I'm not burning it.
Is that different than in Bama Mavik, right?
Yes.
The blowing out the whip to
make a call. Okay, but that's the issue of mechave. Okay, Elliot, we're mixing in a lot of melachas. I assume we're going to have a melacha salad. Okay, so let's see the next and last part of this Mishnah Berurah in Sif Aleph. Hiniach basar al gabei gachalim. You put. So we're not going to be reading all the different parts of this, but you put. You put a piece of raw meat on coals, right? I guess it could happen even not on Yom Ha'atzmaut. I guess maybe sometimes on Shabbos, if it falls on Shabbos. Im nitzlat tzliya gemura kishir grogeres, if it actually has the minimum shear of roasting, chayav is chayav for chilul Shabbos, v'afilo grogeres in b'makam echad, even if it's not in one specific place where you can have that shear throughout the piece of meat, Ella Mislake, Mishnaim, Shlosh Makimas, Gamkin Chayav, a feeling loyal to the Gemura, Rakamacha Ben Drusoi, Gamkin Chayav. Ella the Bezesha in its Liga Gemura, Tarshia, Bazet Soli, Mishnet, Stalim Shala, Bazet Dafka. Then you have to have it through and through. And this is coming already from Rambam, the Ravid. Vilam, Potter. And if not, then you're Potter. Ken Kasavaramam Shalom Balochahe. Recall the Indian Chatos. That's only to be chayav on a complete malacha, the raisa. Isura, yesh b'chol gavni, all examples of this kind of cooking food, even if you didn't get it exactly right, for sure the Rabbanan prohibited. V'chein ma'ashkatz v'ramma mitchila v'inin tzliya ha'ashir gregers, v'gam kein rak la'inin chiyav chatas, v'al isa the raisa yesh b'chol gavni, k'de kaim lon chatzi shir, osu minat ha'ira, Shabbos ayin dalet. So this is, I hope we'll be able to get to it today, maybe not. This ushers in an entirely different, fascinating like have a second basement or something. There's a fascinating element over here, which is we have a principle that chati shir asra Torah. Even if you don't do a full shir of an Issa d'Oraisa, the Torah asks that in Machlokes, Rabbi Yochanan, Reish Lakish, what the rationale behind that is. Is it because maybe he's going to actually complete it and finish the shir, or even if it's not actually going to. Besides the fact that we look at that the possibility that might play out to be the full shear, there might still also be an Issa d'Oraisa in the miktsas that you do. So that's its own sugya. But the point is that we're bringing something up here, which is very key. Maybe it's not even the Rabbanan that the Rabbanan said, don't put something on the blech, don't put something on the fire, even if it's just the heat to cool it off, because maybe you'll stay there and maybe it'll be bishul. That's not necessarily just the harchaka the rabbanan. That's a gzeira that could go into the sugya of chatzi shir asra Torah. So, but we have to draw a distinction between two shirim over here. There's a shir of the extent of bishul, which is machal ben drusai, and then you have the minimum amount of bishul in for given foods. That is the amount of food that you need in order to be chaya for the gregoris. So now, I would like to get back to this in a little bit. Because this is a fascinating question, which plays out many, many times in our kitchens. Could play out. Okay.
Is Masakin an integral part of the Malacha? Does it have to actually improve?
So it's a mashma from many places throughout the Rishonim, and the Sama Chorinim spell this out very much, that the underlying principle has to be that it's somehow being fixed. It's somehow being improved. Not just that it's an objective change, which is not necessarily beneficial at all. But some Achronim say that specific caveat, that it has to be a tikkun, might, when it comes to bishul, be much more subjective. Generally speaking, we say that you have such a thing as batla daita etzel ka adam, right? And people in Hutzel used to carry a masa on their head. That's not considered a derech nesia, and therefore, if they walked out into Sarabim or four Amos Sarabim with the thing on their head, so they're putter. In that city, everyone does it. But it's mashmah. We're going to see hopefully soon that in some achrayim that maybe when it comes to bishul, I'm looking for a tikkun. So maybe that's something that I could generate, that I could decide I need this to be a little bit like this, a little bit like that, and then it could actually get me to be over on bishul, even though. Very good. Well, so now. Okay. So this. Now, before we continue, I want to put in one other aspect of bishul, which distinguishes it from many of the other malachas. Not all, but this is a fascinating sugya, and we did actually refer to it when we were in the sugya of lifnei iver, chatei b'shvil shaliska chavercha. I don't know how many of the... Everyone remembers this, of course, in the summer. Right? The summer was last week. Yeah? So we were talking about the fascinating sugya of Radiyas Apas. So let's just take a little peek at that sugya, Masechet Shabbos, Daf Dalet Amud Aleph. And this is going to be a window into an aspect of bishul which is very, very fascinating and really changes the playing field. I'll throw out a completely different sugya just as an appetizer over here. Just to think about. The first mitzvah in the Torah is Pru Revu. Pru Revu means a person has to leave behind in this world a boy and a girl, we pass them like Beis Hillel, and they themselves have to be Ru'uyim L'Hoyle, they have to themselves be able to procreate. And it has been pointed out that the idea of Vishinandam Levonecha is very similar. That's why the famous Rashi says that Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu that you have to tell Torah to Klai Yisrael in a way that they have it clear and they can repeat it back to you. And what the idea is that Vishinanta means that it's so clear to them that they can teach it to somebody else. So that parallels the idea of Puravu, that you have two children in the world and they themselves could bring another generation. So when you teach Torah, it's got to be, guys, teach Torah, it's got to be Vishinanta, that they can pass it on to the next person. That's a tough one. Okay. And not by accident, it says Vishinantam Livonecha and Chazal Darshan Eidu Atalmidim, but obviously Vonecha is the ideal. So let's see this sugya in Masechet Shabbos. Gufa, Boi Ravi Bar Abaye. It's really supposed to be Beivoi Bar Abaye if you look in the Yavetz. I think it's a crime maybe to name your son Beivoi. Or baby, what? Yeah?
Boy.
Okay. So we see we're on the printout. In the second to last paragraph.
Yeah.
So the Gemara on Daf Gimel had already mentioned this. Hidbik pas betanur. In the old days, there was the pita. You take a raw pas, doesn't really mean pita. Pas, it means dough. It's flat dough, and you just whap it onto the side of the wall, the stone wall of the tanur. Hitiru loy l'radoisa kardem shiyavli dechiyu chatos or loy hitiru. Fascinating question. There is an Isser Derabbanan to use the move. It's like, I don't know, when I was in I think it was fourth grade or fifth grade, I started getting the hockey pressure. I think now it's like, before you're toilet trained, you have to know how to play hockey, I think.
Of course.
And you have equipment that's your size. I think people by the wrist.
Skate before you learn how to walk.
Exactly.
I learned
how to skate at three. You're
in certain communities. And not just north of the Canadian border. You got your pads. It's customized. You know exactly to fit you. Okay. So fine. So now I remember like learning to not to slap but to lift the puck. It was so hard. I managed, but it took a while, right? So there was this move called Radiyas HaPas that you know it's like you go to a matzah bakery. The guy's got this thing and you can't even figure out what he's doing. So you like stick something in the oven or maybe even with your hand, you pop off this freshly baked pizza from the wall of the oven. And that is such a complicated and super skilled kind of talent that Chazal made an Isser D'Rabbanan to do so on Shabbos. It's sitting in the oven on Shabbos. You may not Flip it off. You can't just like, however it is that you chop it off the wall, you're not allowed to do that.
Remember the old school ovens that where they would slap the
bakery.
Taboo. Taboo,
right?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, very good. Rediat. We have to ask them. We gotta go. Maybe make a field trip.
Amazing.
Not on Pesach though.
Put on the list.
I think I have like a, I don't know, it's a Yemenite, I don't know what it is exactly. They literally have one of these ovens in their yard, and they're really going at it before Pesach. Sometimes I think they're like making a carbon Pesach there. I don't know exactly what's going on, but they have an oven there that I think they bake matzahs with.
That's what I'm
okay.
Yard.
Yeah. So now, why am I saying this? Because Rediyas HaPas is innocent to Rabbanan. So the Gemara wants to know what happens if, God forbid, a person is not thinking, Friday night, by mistake, he takes a piece of dough, pops it in the oven in order to bake it, and then suddenly, it's Shabbos, Gevalt. So if this bakes, I'm going to be over the Isser of Bishop. Bishop.
Yeah.
Okay. Can I pop it out?
Oh, that's Rediyas HaPas.
So now, because there's an Isser.
Did it before Shabbos?
No, I put it in on Shabbos. And now I want to prevent myself from being over. So now, could I be over on the Isser Derabbanan of removing it? I always say, like, you know, I want to admit this, that maybe I should admit it. I would just take it out. Like, I'm not going to be over an Isser Skila. Like, I wouldn't ask a question. But the Gemara has Yer Shemayim. Like, if I'm really not allowed to take it out, then I won't take it out. I would be like, I don't want this Isser. But we want to know.
Can you let it bake so that it's charred?
The question is, even if you do that,
that's like leaving a steak.
Yeah, it's not like cold. Like once it's in the box, I don't know what happens.
Once it's cooked,
it's actually bread, and then later on it's going to burn.
Oh, but that should follow the same rule as the steak before that was on the cold.
Right.
Okay.
You can't just leave it on there just
right.
Okay. So I want to point that. So what did I bring in Puravu before? Puravu for a man is a very, very short interval of his own involvement. And then, if these children are born, so he gets the mitzvah, pending who dies, and what, you know, it's a little bit morbid. But basically, if he leaves behind people who have children or could have children, then he's doing the kind of the mitzvah. But, like, the man's maisa mitzvah of Puravu is very much disconnected time-wise, and many other factors, from what's going to end up happening, is going to fulfill the mitzvah. And so the Acharonim have a lengthy discussion about exactly this point. Because the Maisa mitzvah is one place, but then there's a whole process that has to happen, and may or may not happen. So with Bishul, it's not as complicated, but it's also a similar thing. You put something in the oven, and then you're not involved anymore. Because it's set up over here, that's hot. And then the question is, what's going to end up coming out? Okay, so now, but the point is, the Gemara makes it very clear. The Gemara says that if you, by mistake, put in, or maybe even, if you even intentionally put in bread into the oven, then he's a gevalt, I don't want to be over this. Is there? The Gemara ends up saying that to save yourself from an Avera, or, the Tosfos talks about it, if someone else put it in b'shogeg, not b'mezid, he was b'shogeg, but yourself even b'mezid, you may be over on the Isser Derabanan of Rediyas HaPas in order to get the dough out before it actually is karmel panel, before it has some kind of crust, and thereby avoiding the Isser Skila of Chilul Shabbos by preempting the baking process and removing it from the oven. So basically, the Gemara makes it clear that although the Maisa itself is putting it in the oven, the fact that the Malacha, it takes time, is working to your advantage. You could actually prevent yourself from being a car-carrying Mechal Shabbos by whipping out the baking dough in time before it actually gets to the minimal shear of Afia. So this is a very important part of the nature of the Malacha of Bishul and Afia.
So would you, as a, is it a rule, or is it kind of depends on the situation that you would, I would think you would always be allowed to be over the Rabbanan to avoid the Araisa.
So the truth is that the Gemara seems to kind of say what you said, and that where the Gemara seems to be most active in this question is, let's say it was somebody else. So do we say,
I mean, A did it, but B,
do we presume that we say, Chatei or Chatal, Bishvil Sheyizke Chavercha, to spare your friend, somebody else, you get involved in doing something, you're getting your hands dirty with the Derabanan in order to help get this guy off the hook for a Deraisa. Okay.
Rabbi, the Rodiyah Sapas, the rabbis put in because it's a special skill.
Yes.
So and the, therefore you're over...
It's baking related, yes. So
it's all in the wrist.
It's all in the wrist.
Right. It's mom is like that lift shot. It's like a lift shot. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So now... This is the halacha. So the ma'isa... Let's just see the very end of this Gemara. Rav Acha bring the Rav of Masil of Hedya, Amar Aviva Barabaye, Hidvik Paspataner, Hitirul the Radosa, Kodim Shayor, Vele Dei, Isser Skila. It's the end of the Gemara, the second to last quote on the first page here. It's mutter. So we see over here, it's mutter, but what we really, the insight that we're actually more focused on is the fact that the Malacha plays out over a certain amount of time, and if I get it in time, I actually avoided doing the Isser. Even though the involvement that I had till now was enough, the only ingredient there is time. Okay, so now, this is brought down in Shulchan Aruch even. It talks about, let's just start Sefei in Siman Reish Nundala, that's the very bottom of the first page here of the printout. You don't put pas into, you know, pas always means, doesn't really mean the bread, it means the dough. Ela Kadeshi Karmu. What it means is before this man. Before Shabbos, it should already at least have that crust to start to form. Okay? That is either along the wall of the oven, which is very hot, or facing the fire. Wherever it's going to actually happen, that is the din. Okay, now let's look at Sifav. Vim Nisana B'Shabbos. But if you actually put it in to the oven on Shabbos, the dough, I feel amazed. Even if you're a bummy, you did amazed. Still, loy noal linalu b'fanav dalse or shari atshuva, and therefore still mutar lirdois koydem sheyofek kadesh liyavu de iser skila. You're allowed to be over on the iser derabbanan of the iser pass in order to prevent yourself from that happening. Okay, so now. The Pru Revu was an example of this. We have other malachas that are much more direct. Kotzer, I come to a field of wheat or cucumbers. I still remember there was a guy who used to sit next to me in Karen Biavne, a Sephardi fellow. He's back in the day when Israel was an agricultural country that you could actually you could encounter that. Yeah. Now it's like,
you have to drive.
Yeah, I know, but also the people. So this guy, salt of the earth type of guy, I asked him, where you been the past few days, Ayal? He's like, kataft him alafafoni. Now they have tire workers that do it,
Yeah.
Back in the day, he had to leave yeshiva for a couple of days because his parents needed him on the farm to pick cucumbers.
Uh-huh.
Okay? So you pick cucumbers, that's kaitzer. It happened in an instant. Okay? That's all. I'm saying you have malachas that are instantaneous.
Yeah.
You pulled it from the ground, you cut something down, that's the malacha. It began and ended at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And you have other malachas that take a little more time, and other malachas that take a lot of time. So let's say a teichen, you grounded something, you to grind something.
So
it might be a little bit extended, but you go like this, and it's ground. But here, there's a process that needs to take place. Okay? That's the process of bishul of afia. Okay. So now, where I want to take this is in the following fascinating machlokes between the Rashash, I think he's the only one, he's all alone on one side, Rav Shmuel Strashen, one of the great Rabbanim in Vilna, and his comments are in the back of almost every Gemara, Baruch Hashem, in the Almana and the Achim Ram, the Ram Shas, the Ram family were printers in Vilna, and what they accomplished is amazing. They were the ones who published the Shulchan Aruch that we had till recently, supplanted by the newer publications. The Shas that we all use is the familiar Vilna Shas. The Rum family revolutionized Torah publication. And since they were located in Vilna, so a lot of the Vilna Rabbanon got precedence in terms of publishing their Pirushim. But the Rashash maybe towers above all the other ones because his Ha'aras were accepted tremendously by Klal Yisrael. They're not just, look in the back and you'll find the Haggas or Rabbi Tzal Vilner or Rabbi Saul Salanter's father or other people that they have a short... Rashash wrote extensively and his Kashas, even Briska Rav, had to admit that Rav Shash always has the best kashas, even though he wasn't a brisker. He was a Vilner, yeah, not so bad. So the Rav Shash makes a comment that's related to another malacha, namely the malacha of Zareya. And we briefly mentioned this a long time ago. And it actually comes back, it boomerangs back to our malacha. So I'd like to read the Rav Shash with you a little bit. And then perhaps the Minchas Chinuch to see how he differs. The Minchas Chinuch is not alone. It's the Rav Shash basically against the world. So let's see what the Rav Shash says. And he draws a very understandable comparison. Let's see what he says. The Mishnah, the famous Mishnah, which goes through the Lamatas Malachas, Hazareya. Okay? One who plants. So he says, Hein af kol zman shaloi nishrash keman deshadi bekad adam. First of all, you have to know something about planting. So the malacha of planting is, basically you plowed, and you put a seed into the furrow, you planted it, maybe you got to cover it with earth, maybe not, but that's called planting. Wonderful. Till it takes root, so it's basically sitting there. It might be germinating, but it's not actually connecting to the ground, so it's as if it's in a barrel, right? And he points to a Gemara in Menachos, and Daf Samach Tes, which discusses this. That's the sugis of Shtei Alechem and Menachos Ha'Omer. So we call Malkim Kibin Da'i Deiz Ri'asai. What does it talk about over there? It talks about the fact that we know that the carbon Omer, coming up to soon to a Beis HaMikdash near you, there is a carbon Omer which we bring the second day of Pesach, and that's this whole concept that we all understand very well called Chadash. What's Chadash? That's like, you know, if people talk about Chadash, that you're in a really firm community. Like, that's what you want to know. But Chadash basically means that there's an Issa D'Oraisa, which we're not familiar with, which says that any grain that grew over the past year is actually usher to eat, just like Chazer, until the carbon Omer is brought on the second day of Pesach. But when does the clock start ticking? When does the year start? The answer is the year starts from the day of the carbon Pesach, of the carbon Omer. But not anything that was planted then. It has to be that it was hashrusha. It has to be that the wheat or the grain took root already by the time that second day of Pesach comes around. If it had already taken root, then by the time the next year comes around, it's able to be... the other way around. It has to take root before the carbon iron is brought, and then it can become mother. If it did not take root before this carbon iron was brought, you got to wait till the next year. Okay, so it doesn't have to be... What?
They figured that out based on when it's planted.
Ah, so the Mishnah has several times in Shas, many different Masechtas talks about how long it takes for a hashrasha, depending on whether you actually planted the kernel, that could be 2 weeks, or the tia is a sapling, so it already has roots. So the Maisa, it's 2 weeks. Okay? Until that happens, it's like it's in a barrel. It's not really considered connected to the ground, even though the person did the Maisa Zaria. Says the Rosh Hashanah, listen to what he says. Kivan da yidei Zaria say ata, yishor yish achachach, since because of the fact that you planted it on one given day, afterwards it's going to take root, and then he brings it back over to Hilchos Shabbos, chayav, kamoi oife, v'tzoyle, the chayav afal pisha nefa, v'nitzle, achachach me'elov. Whoa. So the Rosh Hashanah is hitting the boo-boo of this malacha. Rosh Hashanah is saying, well, we have a fascinating precedent in the halachas of Vashel of Oifa. What precedent do we have? You start an action now. You're completely not involved. You're not thinking about it. It takes time. And the Torah says, Mazel Tov, you're chayav miso. You have an appointment in Bez the next week. How did that happen? Because I did the initial action. I put it in a situation where it's going to get baked. It's going to get cooked. And presto, I'm guilty of a full-fledged Chilul Shabbos. I'm sorry? Obviously, it has to be that my intention was it's going to remain there, and then when it actually plays out, I'm chayav. Says Rosh Hashanah, it would seem to me that the same thing is also true of Zareya. That you put a seed into the ground. You put a seed into the ground. It's going to take time. Forget about growing. Even just for it to take root, it's going to take time. The Gemara says a couple of weeks. So no matter, the same way that I put something in the oven, and then the fact that it ended up baking without any of my involvement, or even if I'm prevented, right? The sugi in Gittin, I come back, oh, I came back. If the guy's pounding on the oven door and the baker is standing there with his, you know, burly arms like this, laughing at him, and he can't open the oven, he's still going to be chayav misa. That's pretty sad. But the point is that the tshuva is not going to help him, because at the end of the day, he put it in intentionally, and the old tshuva is not going to help him unless it actually comes out before it binks.
To bring back from the topics of previous weeks, if it's...
interesting.
It may not be sikresha in this case. Because just because you put a seed into the ground doesn't mean it's going to take root.
That's fascinating. That's fascinating. That's an absolutely fascinating issue that you brought up. If it's not 100%, would we go back?
It's
so I would think that as we said, when we learned the sugya of sikresha, the whole premise of sikresha, if you remember, was that it's not really my intended goal. So I use sikresha as a tool with which to make you mechaven that you do want this goal. But where I straight up am mechaven that it should be growing, I don't need the mechanism of sikresha in order to make mechayev. As long as that is my kavana, it's davar shemechaven, so I did the malacha. But even more than that, and this is exactly what we're going to see from the Rashash, what makes me over on this malacha? Zareya. So let's take carefully what the Rashash says. Look at this tremendous chiddush. See, he says, if it's true that when it bakes automatically, it makes me chayev, and that's how it works, that initial involvement that I had of putting it in makes me chayev, look at this chiddush. Vihine, second line of the Rashash. Im lokat hazera, if he gathered in, he went back, and he pulled the seed out of the ground, koidem shenishrash, before it actually had a chance to sprout those little roots that are going to connect to the ground, nira depater limafreya alma shezora kivon deloy niskaima machshavta. Says the Rashash, a bomb chiddush, that if it actually happens that he plucks out the seed from the furrow in order to prevent it from taking root, he's able to save himself l'mafreya from being over on the Issa d'Oraisa, the Chiyuv Skila of Zareya. How do I know that, says the Rashash? V'dov hazeh yesh l'lmoid mibaya the Rabba Bar, what's his name again? Rabba Bar Abba? Rabbi Bar Abaye, thank you. Okay, so Rabbi Bar Abaye, that he asks for Reish Michilton in the beginning of the Masech Tandaf Gimel and Dalet, Din Rodeo Kaidem Shanef, a potter, that if you take it out of the oven before it actually starts crusting over your potter. And then he even brings the way he understands the Tosfos. He says, Mashma v'Tosfos, Korban Eidah v'Yerushalmi, the Pirkin, B'dibra Masl Kol Dover, Dim Akar Dover Megiduloi, Im Shuv Shesolei Achakach Potter. So he says that there's a Korban Eidah that's Mashma. He says, a wilder Chiddush, that if a person does kaitzer, he pulls something out of the ground, it's a gevalt, it was Shabbos, and he smooshes it right back in there. So everyone else in the world maybe would say he just did two isurim d'oraisa. And he claims that the carbon eight is a mashma, that you just put it right back in and everything's fine. The rabbi didn't see, right? Good. Let me wash my hands and we're good.
That's how you meet when you turn the light on.
Right.
Exactly. But I'm making a character out of it, but it's not really, he's actually saying it seriously. And the carbon is mashma, and I put it back and it's fine. But that vaday lying near a cloud, that he said, that for sure can't be. The keep of the kvar gomim melechas akira, we all know that once you took something out, you took it out. You don't have to do any other process or rely on any other hitpatrut in order for the thing to actually be that you were koitzer. So replanting it is not going to help you from the ktira, and it probably is just going to be another iser of planting again. Fine. Vihine. Okay. Vihine, he says in the next paragraph, the Rashash, Bizarea, mashma dechayav, after hashrosh, aloitia elabuchol. What I'm saying is correct, and he is correct, obviously. When you plant on Shabbos, it's not shayach for the hashrosha, for the root to actually start happening on Shabbos itself.
Not that big.
Maybe in two Shabbosim. 14 days later. So he's saying, we see there is a malacha out there which doesn't even actually finish up on that Shabbos at all, and nevertheless, it's counted as one of the 39 malachas. Whoa. Let's see how it comes back.
Oh my gosh, what
are you good?
Okay, take, yeah.
I am Mishnah Gimel. V'chein anateya chayav af dezman klitosin imsheches. I am Perek Beis deshviyas Mishnah Vav. Now, so basically, this is the rule. Says the Rosh Hashanah, an unbelievable chiddush that's negeh to us. U'mizeh nearly, the kain ha'oifa b'shabbos im chashecha. Pop dough into the oven right before it gets dark, right before the end of Shabbos. It's not shayach that's going to bake before Shabbos is over. Says the Rosh Hashanah, chayav after ein shoshet yigomer afyosim erev hoydoy. Wow! I don't want you to be my rabbi. Yeah? What happens? You pop something in the oven right before Shabbos is over. Since we've already demonstrated that when it comes to the Melach of Zareya, the Hashrosh is going to be in 2 weeks, and nevertheless, the person can be dead by that time, because they killed him in Beis Din for Bimchal Shabbos. So the same way, says the Rosh Hashanah, if a person puts bread in the oven, but dough in the oven before the end of Shabbos, there's not enough time before Tzitah Shabbat for it to bake. Yeah. He nonetheless has been over a full-fledged Chilul Shabbos and he's Chayav Misa. Wow.
Interesting.
This would actually be cute because then Shabbos is over. You quickly run over. You don't even have the Shaila anymore.
Take it out.
Did it for someone else, because the Gemara says if someone puts it in on purpose, then you can't take it out for him. But here, he puts it in on purpose, then it's after Shabbos already, so then take it out. But the point is that this is a tremendous Chiddush. Two Bomba Chiddush in the Rosh Hashanah says that are linked. First of all, in the same way you can pop the dough out of the oven before it bakes, you're off the hook for Afia. The same thing applies to Zareah. Everyone in the world disagrees. And the second thing is that if that's true, and we've linked the two, so let's look back at Zareah. That I can have a way to prevent it from happening. That the fact that I'm chayev for being Zareah on Shabbos is not connected with the actual plan playing out and the Hashrusha happening. I just need to do the initial thing, and then the rest of it, we close our eyes and we put you to death, God forbid. So says the Rosh Hashanah, the same is true for Bishul and Shabbos.
Your
question.
Why isn't putting it back in considered Zareah?
It is.
If you caught yourself.
No.
He himself, he doesn't like this carbon Adon. He says, he doesn't spell it out, but Pashas, you'd be chayav for two things. As opposed to you fixed it, you just have another Issa Zareah.
He's saying Acha Potter.
No, he's quoting the carbon Adon, that it's mashma, that just put it right back in and you're fine. And he says, no. Once you took it out, that's mukhlat. It's out. And then putting it back in is not fixing it. It's just a new malacha. He didn't spell it out, but that's clearly what he holds. Okay, so let's just try to summarize over here.
Yeah.
What did we see? So Rosh Hashanah, Legabi Zareah, we're going to see when we learn Zareah. But what he brought back to our halacha is a tremendous thing. That even though the Gemara says that if I pull out the dough before it actually is nikrbu panea, the Gemara says in Daft Aleph, so I'm saving myself from Chilul Shabbos. I need the process to play out. But the Rosh Hashanah claims that's not time sensitive. That's process sensitive. But if we are to look at Zareah and see that the process could actually happen after Shabbos, as long as it was initiated on Shabbos, the person is going to be Chayav Misa, we could learn from there, assuming that we learn one from the other, that even if the actual baking happens after Shabbos, nevertheless, the person is Chayav for the Chil Shabbos because the action that he did, where he is involved, took place on Shabbos itself. Tremendous Chiddush of the Rosh Hashanah. But Pashas, we do not say this. But Pashas, we say, like the Minchas Chinuch is going to say over here, that the two Malachas are dissimilar in both ways. So, let's just see over here. V'hinei, Minchas Chinuch. So the Minchas Chinuch in Pashas Yisra, we all know that the 39 Malachas are kemat not mentioned in the Torah. Keharorim b'se'ara t'luyos As some people sing in the Zemiras, the Gemara says that you have very, very few psukim that detail the Isurim of Shabbos, and that's one little hair, and all 39 malachas are hanging on to that one hair. V'hinei malachas azriya im zareya b'makam sheroy litzmoyach. What's that pashat? The only time you're going to be over on malachas azriya is if you take a seed and put it in the ground from where it could grow. If you have a bunch of dry pebbles and you put a seed inside those dry pebbles, right? Well, you know, don't do it on a mountainside. You never know what's going to happen there. But it's, you know, Sand. Okay, maybe sand. Right. Sand. You go to the beach and you apply it right. Ukvar birar nu lekaman.
Yom tov.
Sure.
I don't guess.
Okay. The Alazriyash Zara Chayev af beloy hishrish. So he says straight up, says the Minchas Chinuch, not like the Rashash, that when it comes to the Malach of Zriya, okay, says Chayev af beloy hishrish Chayev, even if it didn't actually take root. V'niklat klal. In other words, as long as you planted it in a place where it could have taken root, see, even if it didn't actually end up happening, you're still chayav for the actual malacha of Zriya that you performed in an acceptable manner when you planted it. You're going to neskalkel, take a fayde, eze siba. Let's say something happened. Someone poured some poison over there. It's not gonna sprout. Or you should take a figbiya min a karka, or right after you planted it, you pulled it out of the ground, chayav al maise hazriya. He's chayav for the maise Zriya. V'loidami la'afia, and it's not comparable to afia where you pull it out before it bakes. That you're putter. The kodesh shenefa ain't a chayav kemavur b'shas. Itiru la'adois the kodesh shetayofe kadesh la'yove de isaskila. Right? Hasam ha'afia hu hamalacha v'chayav b'shas afia. There, the afia is the malacha, and you're chayav when it actually bakes. Avalacha hamalacha he has the ria. V'chayev teichef al azriya before the actual effect of the azriya happens.
Ashrasha is not the malach.
Right.
So with these words, he has taken both assumptions of the Rashash and disagreed with them. First of all, azriya does not need an ultimate ashrasha in order to be chayev. Whatever you do, even if it's on Shabbos, you pull it right out. It's mamish like kitzira. You cut it off. It's now disconnected. You did Zriya. I don't care what you did the next second. The action that I took by putting it in the ground is the final malacha of Zriya. I don't care if it stays there. I don't care what happened afterwards. There's no way to fix it. That's what the Mishnah, the Michas Chinuch claims. And even on Shabbos itself, I took it out. It doesn't make a difference. However, it's different when it comes to baking. Because when it comes to baking, says the Michas Chinuch, the fact that I could save myself by pulling it out of the oven before it gets encrusted is because I actually need the minimum amount of afia in order to complete the action itself.
It's not called
the human endeavor in which I am involved is putting it in the oven. That's true. But it must play out for a minimum of the sheer afia in order for my maisa to be complete. And how do we see that from the Gemara in Daf Dalet that says that if you yank it out beforehand, you're not going to get the Isser Skila. But says the Minchas Chinuch, that's not true when it comes to what? To Zareya. So now, he also has become more makel when it comes to the Malacha of Afia. He's more machmir when it comes to Zariya. Why? Because you can't fix Zariya.
Can't fix it.
Because even if you take it out after Shabbos, before it's Hashrasha, or even on Shabbos, it's not going to help. However, he's more makel when it comes to afia, because he says that if you put it in the oven, obviously, you put it in the oven before Shabbos is over, but it doesn't have a chance to actually bake enough till Shabbos is out, so then you didn't even do the ma'is afia, because we need the ensuing crusting of the bread in order to complete your ma'is. So in these two ways, he would disagree with the assumption of the Rashash. And there's numerous other achrayim that take the same track as Ibn Chaskinuch, and they are mechalak between these two malachas.
So, Rabbi, if I'm kind of nechatzchirch, then I'm having a picnic. I can't throw out a watermelon seed into the ground.
Don't do it. Even if it's a davar shein miskaven, it's davar shein miskaven because I'm not planning on having a watermelon patch.
You don't litter.
It could really be that according to Reb Shimon, it would actually be mutter if it's not like a, it's not a.
Actually planting it.
Just,
you know,
it's
going,
you know,
it's
I wouldn't
do that. I feel we know there's intention to be able to get it
right.
Inherently, you know, it's not going to be for a long time.
Right. So what are you saying?
seems to be actually it's the opposite. One seems that Shrita should be exactly. I mean, the Maisa Avera, it's not kashur to how long it's going to take for it to actually take hold.
Right.
So for Zeria, you're hired right away.
Right.
Inherently, once you put it in, even though you know it's not going to happen.
100%. In other words, the Menuchas Chinuch is saying that b'makom and v'samuso shema terosa rag dulasa, that the fact that you can't really control what's going to happen actually makes it that we cut it off right after you plant it. That's it. Right now, your involvement is finished, and you can't really.
It's a different definition of the melacha.
Yes, yes.
The definition of zuria is just.
In other words, not only are we not talking about the final product of the fruit or of the tree or whatever it's going to be, but even the initial ashrasha is beyond your involvement as far as the Torah is concerned.
That's the isa.
Yes.
Whereas Afia, you have to pass that.
The one thing that I would say is, though, what's a fascinating shaila, if we are to take the approach of the Rashash, that if I pulled out the seed, right, so if I put it in there in order to take it out, I could almost hear that there wouldn't even be a Nisa D'Oraisa.
Right.
Because
you
right. However, what would be according to the Minchas Chinuch and the other Acharim, Rabbi Zalman and Eben Ezel, that know that when I put it in the ground, I'm done. So let's say I put it in the ground, I'll ask to take it out. Would that change things at all? Because you could contend that I didn't intend for it to ever have a possibility of growing, because I'm going to take it out before it has a chance. So this is where we get into a bit of a gray area, and I don't know. But really taking it back to the putting it in the oven before the end of Shabbos. So the Pashas is, like the Minchas Chinuch says, that it has to be Shabbos time when Nikarim Panel, and if the Bishul does not play out, or Afia does not play out on Shabbos, at least in the minimum, then a person is Pater.
It's Butla Daito, meaning that if everyone else, when you plant something, you're planting for a purpose of growing it. If you planted just to hide it for a few hours, then your intention is to take it out.
That would be interesting. Okay.
So he would say, if you're doing the baking, example,
yeah.
So and you did it at the end of Shabbat, like the example we had before, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if there's not enough time before Shabbat ends for it to reach that point of having accomplished afia,
right.
Whatever that is,
yeah,
in a machlin or slide, whatever it is,
the crust,
right?
Okay.
So then you. According to that, you could not, even though you put it in, you did not do the malacha.
It would be impossible for you to do the malacha, right?
That's
impossible. Right. Correct. It's actually a fascinating mission in Krisis, which we encountered a few weeks ago, which talks about doing malachas on the border between the Shabbos and the Yontif. And that you know for sure you're a machal something, and the question is what? Right? So here, let's say I was... I put in some bread at the end of Yontif that's going into Shabbos, so it can't be the Tzoruch Yontif. Why? Because
it's not
for Yontif. But then it actually ends up finishing getting baked on Shabbos. So this would be a fascinating permutation of that mission over there. So as Hashem, we should be zeicha to go further into the halachas of Bishul. And it was just to point out that as Hashem, we're going to have Rabbi Willig Senior here. I hope that at least one, hopefully maybe even two shiurim, that we'll be able to have with him. So Rabbi Ari suggested people pile on all their Bishul Shilas so that you can put it onto the chat or send it to me, and then we'll see if we'll be able to be mishamish the Mar the Shemaitza in Hilchos Bishul in order to get clarity halacha l'maisa.
When is
Rabbi Rebbe?
My father's coming on Vav. Vav's Nissan, like about a week before Pesach. So, he'll be back. That's the
show. He agrees with you. Remember me.